You're tuned to Tidings, and I'm Hazel Kahn. I'm excited today to introduce you to my guest, Tamara Winfrey Harris. She's the author of The Sisters Are All Right, Changing the Broken Narrative of Black Women in America. The book exposes anti-black woman propaganda and shows how real black women are pushing back against distorted cartoon versions of themselves. Tamara is talking to us from Indianapolis, Indiana, which is where she lives, and we're on Skype. So welcome to Tidings, Tamara Winfrey Harris.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think your book is very interesting. You have a lot to tell our audience that a lot of them may not have heard before. So can we start talking about your background, you know, where you started life from?
Sure. I am a native of the Rust Belt city of Gary, Indiana. I went to college at Iowa State University and then returned. I started my career working in the newsroom as a copy editor for the Post Tribune, just based in Indiana. And then for about 10 years, I moved to Chicago and worked in public relations for agencies doing a lot of consumer PR work, but my goal was always to move into the not-for-profit space. My dream job was always to work in a museum, and I got that opportunity and started working at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago, which is a wonderful, inspiring place, and then eventually landing in Indianapolis at the Eitel-Jorg Museum, and now I work for a community foundation.
Let's talk about your book, The Sisters Are All Right, Changing the Broken Narrative of Black Women in America. Why this book? I'm also intrigued in how you actually went about gathering the information.
Once I published this book, my mom reminded me how, as a kid, I would sit and write my own books and magazines. I have always loved to write, and writing a book was always a goal of mine. And I majored in journalism and started off in the newsroom. And though I moved to a similar but very different career and got a chance to write every day as it relates to, you know, communications and marketing, I never lost the love of writing for myself and writing about certain issues, primarily race and gender. So, you know, while I've had my professional career, I've also had a writing career. And for about the last decade, I've written about race and gender and how they intersect with politics and pop culture and current events. And I've written for outlets like the New York Times, New York Magazine, Ms. Magazine, Bitch Magazine, Cosmopolitan. And about, 5 years ago, I initially got the idea to write a book about Black women and marriage. And the impetus was, I don't know whether your listeners will remember this, but there was a lot of conversation about why many Black women were unmarried. The statistic is that Black women are half as likely to marry as white women. And the conversation related to that may not surprise you. It was very gender biased and race biased. I mean, for one, you know, unmarried women are viewed very differently from unmarried men. So the conversation very much revolved around what was wrong with Black women that they weren't getting chosen. But then a lot of it also was related to racism, because a lot of the what's wrong with Black women ended up being, well, they're emasculating, they're too strong, or they're not attractive. You know, going back to common racist tropes about Black women. So initially, my idea was to write about Black women in marriage. But the more I dug in to the discussion, I realized that a lot of the same biases that kind of underpinned the discussion of Black women and marriage also underpin a lot of other discussions about Black women. So the book became a broader thing. And you ask how I gathered the information, in addition to, you know, looking at research and census records and those things. I also put out a call for interviewees. I did that through the media, through social media, through friends of friends. all over the country to try to get women to interview. And I interviewed about 100 Black women from coast to coast. And then I specifically sought out certain types of women. I wanted to make sure that all of the women I talked to were not, you know, 20-somethings. I wanted 30-somethings and 40-somethings, and I wanted senior women. And I wanted to make sure that not all the women I talked to were straight. Some I did face-to-face. Many of them were over the phone.
Talk about the title. It's an intriguing double, triple entendre, I think, title, isn't it?
It is, because when I say the sisters are all right, I am not saying that Black women are not without problems. I mean, we know that that's not true. And many of them are, you know, the product of racism and sexism and classism and other things. Mm-hmm. Too many Black women are poor. Rates of sexual assault are too high. We certainly face challenges. But what I'm saying is that Black women aren't inherently wrong. We are not too loud or too unattractive or too promiscuous. All of the things that are related to stereotypes of being Black and female, we are, as human beings, okay.
The stereotypes, are they coming out of the Black community or mostly out of the white community, or is that not a good question?
No, it's a great question. Their roots are in the white community, but of course, we all, over the hundreds of years, have grown up in this society that has, you know, sexism, racism, and other isms baked into it. So those same stereotypes, they can be perpetuated within the Black community, but certainly their roots are within white privilege and the white community. And most of them have their roots in slavery, although there is one that has more recent roots.
The sisters are all right. One of my questions was, who says they aren't? And I guess you've answered that.
Yes, yeah, to everyone.
Yeah. Then it's internalized by the Black women
exactly
themselves
is.
And it perpetuates.
Yeah.
There's some lovely language. I mean, your book is so nicely written.
Oh, thank you.
When you say the Black narrative is broken, and then you also talk about distortion, like looking in a fun mirror.
Actually, Melissa Paris Perry, who a lot of your listeners probably know, she was an MSNBC personality. She is a professor and a writer, and she wrote this book, Sister Citizen. And she described being a Black woman is looking at yourself through a funhouse mirror. So society's distortion of what it means to be a Black woman. A lot of what I heard from the women I interviewed is that you find yourself living your life to right the distortion. So Melissa Harris Perry talks about sometimes Black women will feed into the stereotypes, thinking that's what they're supposed to be. But then I also talk to women who go the other way, like break their backs trying not to be those stereotypes. So instead of living for themselves, they will live in order to counter the stereotype. So there will be an instance where they need to stand up for themselves at work, but they won't do that because they don't want to be seen as an angry Black woman. And so they feel they have to bite their tongue, or they want to be sexual, but because they don't want to be thought of as a Jezebel or a promiscuous Black woman. So instead of being able to make individual choices that most people can make, Black women are reacting to this distorted version of themselves.
Your book is divided into these chapters which take on each of these myths. And I think it might be just helpful if we go through them. I mean, you've described some of them.
Sure. It would be helpful if I kind of laid out what the stereotypes are.
Yes.
So there were three stereotypes that are kind of rooted in slave culture that helped abet slave culture. Mm-hmm. And those were the stereotype of the mammy, that Black women are natural workhorses, that we are made to serve and that we actually enjoy serving. Abolitionists had started talking about the poor conditions in slavery. And so this image of this happy Black woman who is just happy to be of service kind of emerged to counter that. Mm-hmm. You know, the mammy stereotype really has no needs of her own. She just exists to serve. In antebellum times, it would be her white family.
Yeah, it'd be the mammy in Gone with the Wind is just probably in everybody's mind.
Right. You know, in present times, Black women find themselves being pushed into those roles, like in the workplace or in their families or in their churches, endlessly serving. You even see that trope in a lot of movies, you know, white love interest woman who has like a sassy Black sidekick who seems to have no other life but giving her white female friend love advice and cheering her on. So she is a support system. And then part of the mammy stereotype is that mammy is asexual and unattractive. You know, we all know that the rape of enslaved Black women was routine in slavery. And that in part was how we got new slaves, to make Black women appear unattractive, especially to white men. So that's all part and parcel of that stereotype. Very closely related is the Jezebel stereotype, also from slavery, that positioned Black women as naturally wanton and promiscuous, unrapeable. Again, that sort of tying into, you know, sexual assault during slavery. It's okay because they're not like other women. You know, they are made to do this. So that Jezebel stereotype comes out of that.
They're made to be raped, you mean?
Right. They're made to be used sexually because they enjoy that. And they are not pure and virginal like other women are. And of course, we know that the idea of women is pure and virginal has its own sexist problems that white women have been dealing with for a long time. So, you know, you have the Jezebel stereotype, and then there's the Sapphire stereotype. That also comes from that idea of Black women as workhorses, but it's an added layer that we are hard and masculine and loud and liable to, you know, aggressive, liable to go off and roll our eyes and pop our necks when angered. You see that in play in a lot of brutality that's been visited on Black women, you know, Black women presented as dangers. You know, as dangerous as men are, where white women would not be.
Physically, exactly. Because Black Lives Matter, all those police cases, I was thinking there are very, very few women that are in the public mind from all those police cases. There are parallel cases like that.
Oh, there definitely are.
One woman, was it Sarah Bland?
Sandra Bland. I would encourage your listeners to look at the hashtag Say Her Name, because a lot of Black feminist activists and even the founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, who were three women, have done a lot to, you know, bring to light the fact that Black women are affected by police brutality and extrajudicial killings as well, but no one marches for them. They don't get the same attention as Black men, in the same way that when we go missing, we don't get the same attention as white women. Mm. So there are definitely parallels where Black women face that as well.
So they're intimidating, but in a way they're also invisible.
Right.
They don't have a full profile.
And then the last stereotype is the matriarch, and that came out of the Moynihan Report. It's a government report that was released in the mid-20th century that took a look at Black families. And while it did pinpoint systemic racism that was making it difficult for Black people in many neighborhoods, it said that the greatest problem facing Black families was the fact that Black women were the heads of too many Black households. So it created this idea of a matriarch who is kind of a bundle of all those other stereotypes. She is not like mammy, which is what Black women should be, because she's the head of a household instead of being subordinate. She is a Jezebel, because that's where the myth of the welfare queen who has tons of children. So she's sexually promiscuous. She's emasculating because she's run off her husband or whoever her partner is. So the matriarch is a bundle of all the previous stereotypes, but she also is her own stereotype. If you want to know more, there's a Black feminist who wrote the foundational work on this, and her name is Patricia Hill Collins. And I suggest your readers take a look at her work, because I am certainly not the only one to point out these stereotypes.
Tamara Winfrey Harris is talking about her book, The Sisters Are All Right, Changing the Broken Narrative of Black Women in America. This is Hazel Kahn with Tidings on WPKN Radio.
I would say I've had, as I've toured around and spoken about this book, amazing conversations with non-Black women about a lot of these topics. Because as I said before, you know, we are all touched by sexism, every woman. It just plays out differently. Really, all women are raised to be self-sacrificing. That is what we are told that we're supposed to be. There is an additional racial angle to the way Black women are taught to be self-sacrificing. A lot of women that I've taught to identify with this idea that we have to do everything without assistance. For Black women, it's kind of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, we take inspiration in that because there is the reality of our history and our ancestors that often had very difficult lives, and they persisted and they survived. And there's a lot of inspiration in that, and it feels good. One woman I talked to said the very idea that I can wake up in the morning and that a lot of other women with, you know, similar skin to mine just kept getting up no matter how difficult it was, I find that inspiring. But it also can be damaging if we don't realize that we are human and we are not invulnerable.
Yes, there was this lovely phrase, inhuman durability, and that by being so inhuman, if you will, a lot of the complexity of Black woman is not seen by other people and by herself. Maybe you could just talk about that.
There is a woman in the book who tells this story that just breaks my heart. She is a woman who is in her 60s, and she talks about getting to the point where she realized that she had to take care of herself. You know, she was in her 40s, and she had this panic attack. She thought she was dying, and she wound up in a therapist's office who suggested that she get a full checkup. She found that she had fibroid tumors. She was anemic. She had all these physical problems, and that was kind of her wake-up call, and she changed the way she was living her life. But she also pointed out that she had several close friends that had died because they hadn't reached that point soon enough. You know, there are a lot of examples of Black women leaving their self-care until it's too late, until they're very sick, until they're ailing emotionally or physically because they feel this need to care for everyone else. And that's when it becomes a problem. You know, a lot of the women that I spoke to said there's always this thought in the backs of their heads what their ancestors went through, like they have grandmothers. And one woman said, I have a grandmother who raised 11 kids on a tiny farm in Texas during the Jim Crow era. And I think about how difficult it must have been for her. And then I think, what right do I have, you know, with my office job and my master's degree and my, you know, relative middle class comfort to complain about being overtired? You know, I think probably our foremothers would tell us to stop that. If they had been able to take advantage of therapists and medication and the gym and, you know, all of the things that many of us have access now, they certainly would have, you know.
Yeah, and these illnesses that accumulate, there are higher than average rates of diabetes. Is it heart disease?
High blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, overweight. A lot of the illnesses that are plaguing Black women later in life are ones that could be mitigated by self-care.
And that arise out of this superwoman sort of thing. It's not even super, it doesn't even have the glamour of being superwoman.
It's, yes.
Yeah. And also depression.
Yes, depression as well. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about a welfare queen.
The matriarch is a welfare queen.
Yeah. I had thought about that, about all those children. She's also somebody who rejects men, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, the proof of the pudding, she must have had a lot of men if she had all those children. But that's a promiscuity thing, not a relationship thing.
Right, exactly. It's like, oh, you know, you're promiscuous, you're willing to have sex with men, but then you run them away because mm-hmm. you're aggressive and ill-tempered.
If you were talking to a Black woman instead of to me, a white woman, would you have a different feeling about all of this?
Maybe in just that, if it were a Black female interviewer, we would have some commonality. which may require less explanation. But on the other hand, if I'm talking on a radio show, I'm more than likely talking to a variety of women. So I have to talk in a way that everyone is going to understand. Certainly, there are also Black women or other women of color who have experienced these things, but maybe not interrogated them a lot and don't know where they come from. And there are Black men who may get the ways that race play into their lives, but never ever thought about how gender affects Black women.
Have you had responses from Black men to your book?
I've never talked to any groups that were just Black men, but I have talked to mixed groups, and I have seen some men buy and read my book. I've never gotten negative. I take that back. I've gotten a little bit of negative reaction to some of the articles that I've written related to the book, but for the most part, it's all been positive.
Yeah, you would really be good to throw a light on this question. So a friend of mine who's white, and she became very friendly with a young Black man in the gym, who then went on to get a degree and became a lawyer or stockbroker, something fast track. But she's remained very friendly with him. And she goes to certain events, like football. I think they have football games once a week, he and his friends. And she goes to those. And there are a lot of women there, too. And she said when she goes, and she's the only white woman or a white person, and she feels a hostility on the part of the women. And we talked about that as, this is my territory, our territory. You know, what are you doing here? And I've had that feeling when it's clear that this is an intrusion that's not welcomed. Well, I guess intrusions are never welcomed. But that goes into marriage. Would it be more that Black women marry white men or white women marry Black men? Which is the more frequent? Are there statistics on that?
Yeah, more frequently Black men marry out of the race than Black women marrying out. But I would also say to your friend's point, part of that could also be part of the feeling of being a minority, which, you know, white people generally aren't. When you're not used to being in a situation where you are the only white person, the only person of your race and ethnicity, Black people deal with that all the time. But in this country, it's kind of hard for a white person to have that same experience.
Are you saying it's coming from them, from the white person, rather than from the Black person?
It could be that it's less hostility than kind of the uncomfortability to being, you know, someplace where you're the only person like you, which can kind of be disorienting sometimes. And anticipating hostility. You know, and I would say a lot of people of color might say that they've known that experience where you walk into a classroom or a workplace and you're the only Black person there or the only Latina there, and hoping that people are not going to be hostile towards you and they will treat you well.
Does that get better with time as a person gets older or not? Or is it always there?
No, I think it's always there because racism is always there. The same as if, you know, you're a woman and you work in a mostly male field, if you work in trucking or construction, and you know that when you walk in a room that you may be leading with your gender.
Is it possible to not be a racist?
No, not in this country. It really isn't. And I say that because, again, sexism, racism, homophobia, all of those things are kind of baked into our society. And we all live and exist in this society, so we are all affected by them. And so, you know, part of our job for, you know, good people who want to change things is to figure out how to undo those biases. And it really takes work because everything around us kind of reinforces those things. It'll take a collective effort to change the system, but I think we can start on changing ourselves and questioning our own privileges and our own thinking, which I think then leads to us being able to work together to change the system.
Can you suggest some questions one might ask oneself like that?
A great place, especially for white people, is to start looking at the privileges that being white can give you in this country. Peggy McIntosh, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack, is a great primer that a lot of used in college to just identify the differences between different privileges whether you are white or whether you are a person of color is a neat place to start. I actually, in working on an article, I interviewed lots of people who are allies to marginalized groups. You know, men who consider themselves allies to women working against sexism, and straight people who consider themselves allies to the LGBT community. And all of them agree that the first step, if we want to get rid of, you know, sexism and racism and all of those things, is self-education. Even if it's just Googling and reading books by people who are not like you to start to understand how some of these things work.
The last question. I always feel I'm saying it wrong. What is the right way to say black or to write it? What is the different vibe about capitalizing the B in black when you're writing, not capitalizing it, and saying African-American?
First, I have to say, I don't have a problem with being politically correct, because I think being politically correct just means treating people as they would wish to be treated. So I wish that that term had not been co-opted. I think you will find a lot of answers to that question. Speaking for myself, I don't find either offensive. You know, whether or not I capitalize black depends on what style guide I'm using. And some people will say they prefer black because they consider African-American referencing specifically black descendants of slaves in America versus someone who immigrated from Jamaica, who, yes, did come by way of Africa. But so some people think black is more inclusive. I think you'll find that people use them pretty interchangeably.
Are you planning another book?
I am. I'm working on another book about black girls.
Yeah. Is it going to be the same methodology of...
Similar, but not completely. You know, I'm having to do a lot of research. I'm writing with a co-author. Her name is Deshong Perry Smitherman. And we're going to look at specific challenges facing black girls today. So it's a little bit different, but we are preferencing the voices of black girls. But we're also looking at research and speaking to educators and psychologists and social workers to kind of dig up what it is like to be a black girl today and how we might make radical intervention in their lives to make sure that they grow up feeling successful and all right. We want to try to create a blueprint so that, for instance, parents can think about how they're raising their black girls and what they need to do to undo some of the challenges that black girls face.
So, Tamara, I'm really so happy to have made this connection with you. What should we do to end? Could you tell people again where they can find out more?
I am very early in writing my second book, so that'll be a while. But if people want to keep in touch with me, they can visit TamaraWinfreyHarris.com. And I also encourage them to follow me on social media. On Twitter, it's What Tammy Said. So T-A-M-I is Tammy, What Tammy Said. And on Facebook, my author page is Tamara Winfrey Harris. And I hope people will get in touch and follow me so we can have great discussions. And I write a monthly column called Some of Us Are Brave for Bitch Magazine. I also distribute those via social media.
So there's many, many ways for people to get in touch with you. Thank you very much, Tamara. I hope we can stay in touch.
Thank you so much, Hazel, for having me.
You heard Tamara Winfrey Harris talking about her book, The Sisters Are All Right, Changing the Broken Narrative of Black Women in America. You can hear Tidings on the second Wednesday of the month at 7:30 p.m. All Tidings programs are produced by Tony Ernst and archived as podcasts on hazelkahn.com.